with Stephen Murray, Maurice Denham, Noel Johnson, Michael Williams, and Douglas Storm. St. Joan.
A fine spring morning on the River Meuse between Lorraine and Champagne, in the year 1429 A.D., in the castle of Vaucouleurs. Captain Robert de Baudricourt, a military squire, handsome and physically energetic but with no will of his own, is disguising that defect in his usual fashion by storming terribly at his steward.
No eggs! No eggs! Thousand thunders, man, what do you mean by no eggs?
Sir, it is not my fault. It is the act of God.
Blasphemy! You tell me there are no eggs and you blame your maker for it.
Sir, what can I do? I cannot lay eggs.
Ah, you jest about it.
No, sir, God knows. We all have to go without eggs, just as you have, sir. The hens will not lay.
Indeed. My fault, I suppose, eh?
Oh, sir, you always give my most innocent words such a turn.
I will give your neck a turn if you dare tell me when I ask you how many eggs there are that you cannot lay any.
Oh, sir, sir!
Not oh, sir, but no, sir, no, sir. My three Barbary hens and the black are the best layers in Champagne, and you come and tell me that there are no eggs. Who stole them? Tell me that before I kick you out through the castle gate for a liar and a seller of my goods to thieves! The milk was short yesterday, too. Do not forget that.
I know, sir. I know only too well. There is no milk. There are no eggs. Tomorrow there will be nothing.
Nothing? You will steal the lot, eh?
No, sir. Nobody will steal anything. But there is a spell on us, sir. We are bewitched.
That story is not good enough for me. Robert de Baudricourt burns witches and hangs thieves. Go, bring me 4 dozen eggs and 2 gallons of milk here in this room before noon, or heaven have mercy on your bones. I will teach you to make a fool of me.
Sir, I tell you, there are no eggs. There will be none. Not if you were to kill me for it. As long as the maid is at the door.
The maid? What maid? What are you talking about?
The girl from Lorraine, sir, from Domremy.
30,000 thunders, 50,000 devils. Do you mean to say that that girl who had the impudence to ask to see me 2 days ago, and whom I told you to send back to her father with my orders that he was to give her a good hiding, is here still?
I have told her to go, sir. She won't.
I did not tell you to tell her to go. I told you to throw her out. You have 50 men-at-arms and 12 lumps of able-bodied servants to carry out my orders. Are they afraid of her?
She is so positive, sir.
Positive? Now, see here, I am going to throw you downstairs.
No, sir, please.
Well, stop me by being positive. It's quite easy. Any slut of a girl can do it.
Oh, sir, sir, you cannot get rid of her by throwing me out.
No.
You see, sir, you are a much more positive man than I am. But so is she.
I am stronger than you are, you fool.
No, sir, it isn't that. It's your strong character, sir. She is weaker than we are. She is only a slip of a girl, but we cannot make her go.
You parcel of curs, you are afraid of her.
No, sir, we are afraid of you, but she puts courage into us. She really doesn't seem to be afraid of anything. Perhaps you could frighten her, sir.
Perhaps. Where is she now?
Down in the courtyard, sir, talking to the soldiers as usual. She's always talking to the soldiers, except when she's praying.
Praying? You believe she prays, you idiot. I know the sort of girl that is always talking to soldiers. She shall talk to me a bit. Hello, you there?
Is it me, sir?
Yes, you.
Be you captain?
Yes, damn your impudence. I be captain. Come up here. Show her the way, soldier, and shove her along quick.
Yes, sir.
She wants to go and be a soldier herself. She wants you to give her soldier's clothes. Armor, sir, and a sword, actually.
Give her a sword.
Good morning, Captain Squire. Captain, you are to give me a horse and armor and some soldiers and send me to the Dauphin. Those are your orders from my lord.
Orders from your lord? And who the devil may your lord be? Go back to him and tell him that I am neither duke nor peer at his orders. I am Squire of Baudricourt, and I take no orders except from the king.
Yes, Squire, that is all right. My lord is a king of heaven.
Why, the girl's mad. Why didn't you tell me so, you blockhead?
Sir, do not anger her. Give her what she wants.
They all say I'm mad until I talk to them, Squire. But you see that it is the will of God that you are to do what he has put into my mind.
It is the will of God that I shall send you back to your father with orders to put you under lock and key and thrash the madness out of you. What have you to say to that?
You think you will, Squire. But you'll find it all coming quite different. You said you would not see me, but here I am.
Yes, sir. You see, sir.
Hold your tongue, you.
Yes, sir.
So, you are presuming on my seeing you, are you?
Yes, Squire.
Now listen to me. I am going to assert myself.
Please do, Squire. The horse will cost 16 francs. It is a good deal of money, but I can save it on the armor. I can find a soldier's armor that will fit me well enough. I'm very hardy, and I do not need beautiful armor made to my measure like you wear. I shall not want many soldiers. The Dauphin will give me all I need to raise the siege of Orleans.
To raise the siege of Orleans?
Yes, Squire. That is what God is sending me to do. 3 men will be enough for you to send with me. If they're good men and gentle to me, they promise to come with me. Polly and Jack.
Polly? You impudent baggage. Do you dare call Squire Bertrand de Plongée Polly to my face?
His friends call him so, Squire. I did not know he had any other name. Jack?
Oh, that is Monsieur Jean Metz, I suppose.
Yes, Squire. Jack will come willingly. He's a very kind gentleman and gives me money to give to the poor. Oh. And I think John Godsave will come and Dick the Archer and their servants, John of Honecourt and Julian. There will be no trouble for you, Squire. I've arranged it all. You have only to give the order.
Well, I am damned.
No, Squire. God is very merciful. And the blessed saints, Catherine and Margaret, who speak to me every day, will intercede for you. You will go to paradise. And your name will be remembered forever as my first helper.
Steward, is this true about Monsieur de Poulanger?
Yes, sir. And about Monsieur de Metz, too. They both want to go with her.
We'll see about that. Hello, you there. Send Monsieur de Poulanger to me, will you? Get out, you, and wait in the yard.
Right, Squire.
Go with her, you dithering imbecile. Stay within call and keep your eye on her. I shall have her up here again.
Do so, sir, in God's name. Think of those hens, the best layers in Champagne.
Think of my boot and take your backside out of reach of it.
Oh, yes, sir. You wanted me?
Ah. It isn't service, Polly. A friendly talk. It's about this girl you are interested in. Now, I have seen her. I have talked to her. First, she's mad. That doesn't matter. Second, she's not a farm wench. She's a bourgeoise. That matters a good deal. I know her class exactly. Her father came here last year to represent his village in a lawsuit. He is one of their notables, a farmer. He might have a cousin, a lawyer, or in the church. People of this sort may be of no account socially, but they can give a lot of bother to the authorities. That is to say, to me. So friends or no friends, Polly, hands off her.
I should as soon think of the Blessed Virgin herself in that way as of this girl.
But she says you and Jack and Dick have offered to go with her. What for? You're not going to tell me that you take her crazy notion of going to the Dauphin seriously, are you?
There is something about her. They are pretty foul-mouthed and foul-minded down there in the guardroom, some of them. But there hasn't been a word that has anything to do with her being a woman. They have stopped swearing in front of her. There is something. Something. It may be worth trying.
Oh, come, Polly, pull yourself together. Common sense was never your strong point, but this is a little too much.
What is the good of common sense? The English will take Orleans. The bastard Dunois will not be able to stop them.
He beat the English the year before last at Montargis. I was with him.
No matter. His men are cowed now, and he can't work miracles. And I tell you that nothing can save our side now but a miracle.
Miracles are all right, Polly. The only difficulty about them is that they don't happen nowadays.
I used to think so. I'm not so sure now. At all events, this is not a time to leave any stone unturned. And there is something about the girl.
Oh, you think the girl can work miracles, do you?
I think the girl herself is a bit of a miracle. Anyhow, she is the last card left in our hand. Better play her and throw up the game.
You really think that?
Is there anything else left for us to think?
Look here, Polly. If you were in my place, would you let a girl like that do you out of 16 francs for a horse?
I will pay for the horse.
You will?
Yes, I will back my opinion.
You will really gamble on a forlorn hope to the tune of 16 francs?
It is not a gamble.
What else is it?
It is a certainty. Her words and her ardent faith in God have put fire into her.
Ah, you're as mad as she is.
We want a few mad people now. See where the sane ones have landed us.
I shall feel like a precious fool. Still, if you feel sure.
I feel sure enough to take her to Chinon. Unless you stop me.
This is not fair. You're putting the responsibility on me.
It is on you, whichever way you decide.
Yes, that's just it. Which way am I to decide? Oh, you don't see how awkward this is for me. Do you think I ought to have another talk to her?
Yes.
Joan!
Will you let us go, Polly?
Come here. Shall I leave you with her?
No, stay here and back me up.
Jack, we'll go halves for the horse.
Well.
Sit down, Joan.
May I?
Do what you're told. What is your name?
They always call me Jenny in Lorraine. Here in France, I'm Joan. The soldiers call me the maid.
What is your surname?
Surname? What is that? My father sometimes calls himself Dark, but I know nothing about it. You met my father.
Yes, yes, I remember. You come from Domrémy in Lorraine, I think. How old are you?
17, so they tell me. It might be 19, I don't remember.
What did you mean when you said that St. Catherine and St. Margaret talk to you every day?
They do.
What are they like?
I will tell you nothing about that. They have not given me leave.
But you actually see them, and they talk to you just as I am talking to you.
No, it's quite different. I cannot tell you. You must not talk to me about my voices.
How do you mean, voices?
I hear voices telling me what to do. They come from God.
They come from your imagination.
Well, of course. That is how the messages of God come to us.
Checkmate.
No fear. So, God says you are to raise the siege of Orleans.
And to crown the Dauphin in Reims Cathedral.
Crown the Dauphin.
And to make the English leave France.
Anything else?
Not just at present, thank you, Squire.
I suppose you think raising a siege is as easy as chasing a cow out of a meadow. You think soldiering is anybody's job?
I do not think it can be very difficult if God is on your side and you're willing to put your life in his hands. But many soldiers are very simple.
Simple? Did you ever see English soldiers fighting?
They're only men. God made them just like us. But he gave them their own country and their own language. And it is not his will that they should come into our country and try to speak our language.
Who's been putting such nonsense into your head? Don't you know that soldiers are subject to their feudal lord? And that it is nothing to them or to you whether he is the Duke of Burgundy or the King of England or the King of France. What has their language to do with it?
I do not understand that a bit. We're all subject to the King of Heaven. And he gave us our countries and our languages and meant us to keep to them. If it were not so, it would be murder to kill an Englishman in battle. And you, Squire, would be in great danger of hellfire. You must not think about your duty to your feudal lord, but about your duty to God.
It's no use, Robert. She can choke you like that every time.
Can she, by St. Denis? We shall see. We are not talking about God. We are talking about practical affairs. I ask you again, girl. Have you ever seen English soldiers fighting? Have you ever seen them plundering, burning, turning the countryside into a desert? Have you heard no tales of their black prince who was blacker than the devil himself, or of the English king's father?
You must not be afraid.
Damn you, I am not afraid! And who gave you leave to call me Robert?
You are called so in church in the name of our Lord. All the other names are your father's or your brother's or anybody's. Listen to me, Squire. At Domrémy, we had to fly to the next village to escape from the English soldiers. Three of them were left behind. Wounded. I came to know these three poor goddams quite well. They had not half my strength.
Do you know why they are called goddams?
No. Everyone calls them goddams.
It is because they are always calling on their god to condemn their souls to perdition. That is what goddam means in their language. How do you like it?
God will be merciful to them. And they will act like his good children when they go back to the country he made for them. And made them for. I have heard the tales of the Black Prince. The moment he touched the soil of our country, the devil entered into him and made him a black fiend. But at home, in the place made for him by God, he was good. It is always so. If I went to England against the will of God to conquer England and try to live there and speak its language, the devil would enter into me. And when I was old, I should shudder to remember the wickedness I did.
Perhaps. But the more devil you were, the better you might fight. That is why the goddams will take Orleans, and you cannot stop them, nor 10,000 like you.
1,000 like me can stop them. 10 like me can stop them with God on our side. You do not understand, Squire. Our soldiers are always beaten because they're fighting only to save their own skins. And the shortest way to save your skin is to run away. Our knights are thinking only of the money they'll make in ransoms. It is not kill or be killed with them, but pay or be paid. But I will teach them all to fight, that the will of God may be done in France. And then they will drive the poor goddams before them like sheep. You and Polly will live to see the day when there will not be an English soldier on the soil of France. And there will be but one king there, not the feudal English king, but God's French one.
Polly, this may be all rot, but the troops might swallow it. Well, nothing that we can say seems able to put any fight into them. Even the Dauphin might swallow it, and if she can put fight into him, she can put it into anybody.
I see no harm in trying. Can you? There is something about the girl...
Now listen to me, you. And don't cut in before I have time to think.
Yes, Squire.
Your orders are that you are to go to Chinon under the escort of this gentleman and three of his friends.
Oh, Squire. Your head is all circled with light. Like a saint's.
How is she to get into the royal presence?
I don't know. How did she get into my presence? If the Dauphin can keep her out, he is a better man than I take him for. I will send her to Chinon, and she can say I sent her. Then let come what may, I can do no more.
And the dress? I may have a soldier's dress, mayn't I, Squire?
Have what you please. I wash my hands of it.
Come, Polly!
Goodbye, Polly. I am taking a big chance. Few other men would have done it. But as you say, there is something about her.
Yes, there is something about her.
Goodbye.
Sir! Sir!
Oh, what now?
Oh, the hens are laying like mad, sir. 5 dozen eggs.
Christ in heaven. She did come from God.
An antechamber in the castle of Chinon, in Touraine. It is late in the afternoon, on the 8th of March, 1429. The Archbishop of Reims and the Lord Chamberlain, Monseigneur de la Tremouille, are waiting for the Dauphin.
What the devil does the Dauphin mean by keeping us waiting like this? I don't know how you have the patience to stand there like a stone idol.
You see, I am an archbishop, and an archbishop is a sort of idol. At any rate, he has to learn to keep still and suffer fools patiently. Besides, my dear Lord Chamberlain, it is the Dauphin's royal privilege to keep you waiting, is it not?
Dauphin be damned, saving your reverence.
Sir?
At last. Well, page?
No, my lord, it's not his majesty. Monsieur de Ray is approaching.
Young Bluebeard, why announce him?
Captain Lair is with him. Something's happened, I think.
Monsieur de Ray.
Your faithful lamb, Archbishop. Good day, my lord.
Good day.
Do you know what has happened to Lair?
He has sworn himself into a fit, perhaps?
No, just the opposite. Foul-mouthed Frank, the only man in Touraine who could beat him at swearing, was told by a soldier that he shouldn't use such language when he was at the point of death.
Nor at any other point. But was foul-mouthed Frank on the point of death?
Yes, he has just fallen into a well and been drowned. Lair is frightened out of his wits. Lair, I have just been telling the Chamberlain of the Archbishop. The Archbishop says that you are a lost man.
Oh, this is nothing to joke about. It is worse than we thought. It was not a soldier, but an angel dressed as a soldier.
An angel?
Yes, an angel. She's made her way from Champagne with half a dozen men through the thick of everything. Burgundians, goddams, deserters, robbers, and Lord knows who. And they never met a soul except the country folk. I know one of them, de Poulanger. He says she's an angel. If ever I utter an oath again, may my soul be blasted to eternal damnation.
A very pious beginning, Captain.
His Majesty!
Oh! Archbishop! Do you know what Albert de Baudricourt is sending me from Vaucouleurs?
I am not interested in the newest toys.
It isn't a toy. However, I can get on very well without your interest.
Your Highness is taking offense very unnecessarily.
Thank you. You are always ready with a lecture, aren't you?
Enough grumbling. What have you got there?
What is that to you?
It is my business to know what is passing between you and the garrison in Vaucouleurs. Give me that paper.
Oh! You all think you can treat me as you please because I owe you money and because I'm no good at fighting. But I have the blood royal in my veins.
Even that has been questioned, Your Highness. One hardly recognizes in you the grandson of Charles the Wise.
I want to hear no more of my grandfather. He was so wise that he used up the whole family's stock of wisdom for 5 generations and left me, the poor fool I am, bullied and insulted by all of you.
Control yourself, sir. These outbursts of petulance are not seemly.
Another lecture. Thank you. What a pity it is that though you are an archbishop, saints and angels don't come to see you.
What do you mean?
Aha! Ask that bully La Tremouille there.
Hold your tongue, do you hear?
Oh, I hear. You needn't shout. The whole castle can hear. Why don't you go and shout at the English and beat them for me? Don't you raise your hand to me! It's high treason!
Come, steady, Duke, come, steady. This will not do. My Lord Chamberlain, please, please. We must keep some sort of order. And you, sir, if you cannot rule your kingdom, at least try to rule yourself.
Another lecture. Thank you.
Here, read the accursed thing for me. He has sent the blood boiling into my head. I can't distinguish the letters.
I will read it for you, if you like. I can read, you know.
Yes, reading is about all you are fit for. Can you make it out, Archbishop?
I should have expected more common sense from de Baudricourt. He's sending some cracked country lass here.
No, he's sending a saint, an angel. And she's coming to me. To me, the king. And not to you, Archbishop, holy as you are. She knows the blood royal if you don't.
You cannot be allowed to see this crazy wench.
But I am the king. And I will.
Then she cannot be allowed to see you now.
I tell you I will. I am going to put my foot down.
Naughty. What would your wise grandfather say?
That just shows your ignorance, Bluebeard. My grandfather had a saint who used to float in the air when he was praying and told him everything he wanted to know. My poor father had 2 saints, Marie de Maille and the Gasque of Avignon. It is in our family, and I don't care what you say. I will have my saint, too.
This creature is not a saint. She's not even a respectable woman. She does not wear women's clothes. She is dressed like a soldier and rides round the country with soldiers.
What?
Do you suppose such a person can be admitted to your Highness's court?
Stop.
Did you say a girl in armor like a soldier?
So de Baudricourt describes her.
But by all the devils in hell. Oh, God, forgive me. What am I saying? By Our Lady and all the saints, this must be the angel that struck foul-mouthed Frank dead for swearing.
You see? A miracle.
She may strike the lot of us dead if we cross her. Oh, for heaven's sake, Archbishop, be careful what you are doing.
Rubbish. Nobody has been struck dead. A drunken blackguard who's been rebuked 100 times for swearing has fallen into a well and been drowned. A mere coincidence.
I do not know what a coincidence is. I do know that the man is dead and that she told him he was going to die.
We are all going to die, Captain.
Oh, I hope not.
We can easily find out whether she is an angel or not. Let us arrange, when she comes, that I shall be the Dauphin and see whether she will find me out.
Yes, I agree to that. If she cannot find the blood royal, I'll have nothing to do with her.
It is for the church to make saints. Let de Baudricourt mind his own business and not dare usurp the function of his priest. I say the girl shall not be admitted.
But Archbishop...
I speak in the church's name. Your Highness, do you dare say she shall?
Oh, if you make an excommunication matter, I've nothing more to say, of course. But you haven't read the end of the letter. De Baudricourt says she will raise the siege of Orleans and beat the English for us.
Rot.
Well, will you save Orleans for us with all your bullying?
Do not throw that in my face again, do you hear? I've done more fighting than you ever did or ever will. But I cannot be everywhere.
Well, that's something.
You have Jack Dunois at the head of your troops in Orleans. The brave Dunois, the handsome Dunois, the wonderful, invincible Dunois, the darling of all the ladies, the beautiful bastard. Is it likely that the country lass can do what he cannot do?
Why doesn't he raise the siege, then?
The wind is against him.
How can the wind hurt him at Orleans? It is not on the channel.
It's on the River Loire, and the English hold the bridgehead. He must ship his men across the river and upstream if he is to take them in the rear. Well, he cannot, because there is a devil of a wind blowing the other way. He's tired of paying the priest to pray for a west wind. What he needs is a miracle. You tell me that what the girl did to foul-mouthed Frank was no miracle. No matter. It finished Frank. If she changes the wind for Dunois, that may not be a miracle either, but it may finish the English. What harm is there in trying?
It is true that de Baudricourt seems extraordinarily impressed. But the church must examine the girl before anything decisive is done about her. However, since His Highness desires it, let her attend the court.
I will find her and tell her.
Come with me, Bluebeard, and let us arrange so that she will not know who I am. You will pretend to be me.
Pretend to be that thing? Holy Michael!
I wonder, will she pick him out?
Of course she will.
Why? How is she to know?
She will know what everyone in Chinon knows. That the Dauphin is the meanest looking and worst dressed figure in the court. And that the man with the blue beard is Gilles de Rais.
I never thought of that.
You are not so accustomed to miracles as I am. It is part of my profession.
But that would not be a miracle at all. I should call it humbug.
You would be wrong, my friend. Parables are not lies because they describe events that have never happened. Miracles are not frauds because they are often, I do not say always, very simple and innocent contrivances by which the priest fortifies the faith of his flock.
Well, I wish I were clever enough to know how much of you is God's archbishop and how much the most artful fox in Touraine. Come on, or we shall be late for the fun. And I want to see it, miracle or no miracle.
The Duke of... Attention! The Duke of Vendôme presents Joan the Maid to His Majesty.
Let her approach the throne.
Her hair.
Shh, ladies, ladies.
I wear it like this because I am a soldier. Where be Dauphin?
You are in the presence of the Dauphin.
Come, Bluebeard. Thou canst not fool me.
Ah, well.
Where be Dauphin? Now, where? Ah!
Oh!
Gentle little Dauphin, I am sent to you to drive the English away from Orleans and from France, and to crown you king in the cathedral at Reims, where all true kings of France are crowned.
You see, all of you, she knew the blood royal. Who dares say now that I'm not my father's son? But if you want me to be crowned at Reims, you must talk to the archbishop, not to me. There he is.
Oh, my lord. My lord, I'm only a poor country girl, and you are filled with the blessedness and glory of God himself. But you will touch me with your hands and give me your blessing, won't you?
The old fox blushes.
Another miracle.
Child, you are in love with religion.
Am I? I never thought of that. Is there any harm in it?
There is no harm in it, my child. But there is danger.
There is always danger except in heaven. Oh, my lord, you have given me such strength, such courage. It must be a most wonderful thing to be archbishop.
Gentlemen, ladies, your levity is rebuked by this maid's faith. I am, God help me, all unworthy, but your mirth is a deadly sin.
Oh, my lord archbishop, will you send all these silly folks away so that I may speak to the Dauphin alone?
Come, gentlemen, ladies, the maid comes with God's blessing and must be obeyed.
Will you allow me to pass?
Oh, beg pardon, ma'am, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Be that queen?
No, she thinks she is.
Oh.
I'll trouble your highness not to jibe at my wife.
Who be old Gruff and Grum?
He is the Duke de la Trémouille.
What be his job?
He pretends to command the army. Whenever I find a friend I can care for, he kills him.
Why does let him?
Well, how can I prevent him? He bullies me. They all bully me.
Art afraid?
Yes, I am afraid. There's no use preaching to me about it. It's all very well for these big men with their armour that is too heavy for me and their swords that I can hardly lift and their muscle and their shouting and their bad tempers. They like fighting. Most of them are making fools of themselves all the time they're not fighting. Well, I'm quiet and sensible, and I don't want to kill people. I'm not built that way, and there's an end of it.
Blethers, we're all like that to begin with. I shall put courage into thee.
But I don't want to have courage put into me. I want to sleep in a comfortable bed and not live in continual terror of being killed or wounded. Put courage into others, and let them have their belly full of fighting, but let me alone.
It's no use, Charlie. Thou must face what God puts on thee. If thou fail to make thyself king, thou'll be a beggar. What else art fit for? Come. Let me see thee sitting on the throne. I have looked forward to that.
What is the good of sitting on the throne when the other fellows give all the orders? However. Here is the king for you. Look your fill at the poor devil.
Thou'rt not king yet, lad. Thou'rt but dauphin. Be not led away by them around thee. Dressing up don't fill empty noddle. I know the people. The real people that make thy bread for thee. And I tell thee, they count no man king of France until the holy oil has been poured on his hair and himself consecrated and crowned in Reims Cathedral. And thou needst new clothes, Charlie. Why does not Queen look after thee properly?
We're too poor. She wants all the money we can spare to put on her own back. Besides, I'd like to see her beautifully dressed. I don't care what I wear myself. I should look ugly anyhow.
There is some good in thee, Charlie. But it is not yet a king's good.
We shall see. I am not such a fool as I look. I have my eyes open. And I can tell you that one good treaty is worth 10 good fights. These fighting fellows lose all in the treaties that they gain on the fights.
Thou must fight, Charlie, whether thou will or no. I will go first to hearten thee. We must take our courage in both hands, aye, and pray for it with both hands too.
Oh, do stop talking about God and praying. I can't bear people always praying. Isn't it bad enough to have to do it at the proper times?
Oh, thou poor child, thou hast never prayed in thy life. Oh, I must teach thee from the beginning.
I am not a child. I am a grown man and a father, and I will not be taught any more.
Aye, you have a little son. He that will be Louis the 11th when you die. Would you not fight for him?
No, horrid boy, he hates me. He hates everybody, selfish little beast. I don't want to be bothered with children. I don't want to be a father, and I don't want to be a son. I want to be just what I am. Oh, why can't you mind your own business and let me mind mine?
Minding your own business is like minding your own body. It's the shortest way to make yourself sick.
Can you do any cures? Can you turn lead into gold or anything of that sort?
I can turn thee into a king in Reims Cathedral. And that is a miracle that will take some doing, it seems.
If we go to Reims and have a coronation, man will want new dresses. We can't afford them. I'm all right as I am.
Well, as you are. And what is that? Less than my father's poorest shepherd. Thou'rt not lawful owner of thine own land of France till thou be consecrated.
But I shall not be lawful owner of my own land anyhow. Will the consecration pay off my mortgages? I've pledged my last acre to the Archbishop and that fat bully de la Tremouille. I owe money even to Bluebeard.
Charlie, I come from the land. And I tell thee that the land is thine to rule righteously and to keep God's peace in, and not to pledge at the pawn shop as a drunken woman pledges her children's clothes. And I come from God to tell thee to kneel in the cathedral and solemnly give thy kingdom to him for ever and ever, and become the greatest king in the world as his steward and his bailiff, his soldier and his servant. The very clay of France will become holy. Her soldiers will be the soldiers of God. The rebel dukes will be rebels against God. The English will fall on their knees and beg thee, let them return to their lawful homes in peace. Wilt be a poor little Judas, and betray me and him that sent me?
Oh, if only I dare.
I shall dare. Dare and dare again in God's name. Art for or against me?
I'll risk it. I warn you, I shan't be able to keep it up, but I'll risk it. You shall see. Hello? Come back, everybody! Mind you stand by and don't let me be bullied. Now, come along, will you? The whole court! Now, I'm for it. But no matter. Here goes. Call for silence, you little beast, will you?
Silence for His Majesty the King! The King speaks! Will you be silent there?
I have given the command of the army to the maid.
What?
The maid is to do as she likes with it.
Oh, what is this? I command the army.
Charlie?
Pa!
Thou art answered, old gruff and grum. Who is for God and his maid? Who is for Orleans with me?
For God and his maid! To Orleans!
To Orleans! To
Orleans! Orleans, May the 29th, 1429. It is evening, and Dunois is pacing up and down a patch of ground on the south bank of the Silver Loire, commanding a long view of the river in both directions. He has had his lance stuck up with a pennon, which streams in a strong east wind. His page is sitting on the ground, idly watching the water.
West wind, west wind, west wind. Strumpet! Steadfast when you should be wanton. Wanton when you shall be steadfast. West wind on the silver Loire. What rhymes to Loire? Change, curse you, change! English harlot of a wind, change! West, west, I tell you!
See, there she goes.
Where? Who? The maid?
No, the kingfisher. Like blue lightning, she went into that bush.
Is that all? You infernal young idiot.
Look, there goes the other.
Where?
Passing the reeds.
I see.
You blew me up because you were not in time to see them yesterday.
You knew I was expecting the maid when you set up your yelping. I will give you something to yelp for next time.
Aren't they lovely?
Mary in the blue snood. Kingfisher colour. Will you grudge me a west wind?
Oh, who goes there?
The maid.
Let her pass. Hither, maid, to me.
See, you bastard of Orleans.
You see the bend sinister on my shield. Are you Joan the maid?
I am.
Where are your troops?
Miles behind. They've cheated me, and they brought me to the wrong side of the river.
I told them to.
Why did you? The English are on the other side.
The English are on both sides.
But Orleans is on the other side. We must fight the English there. How can we cross the river?
There is a bridge.
In God's name, then, let us cross the bridge and fall on them.
It seems simple, but it cannot be done.
Who says so?
I say so. And older and wiser heads than mine are of the same opinion.
Then your older and wiser heads are fat heads. They've made a fool of you, and now they want to make a fool of me too, bringing me to the wrong side of the river. Do you not know that I can bring you better help than ever came to any general or any town?
Your own?
No. The help and counsel of the King of Heaven, which is the way to the bridge.
You are impatient, maid.
Well, is this a time for patience? Our enemy is at our gates, and here we stand doing nothing. Oh, why are you not fighting? Listen to me. I will deliver you from fear.
No, my girl. If you delivered me from fear, I should be a good knight for a storybook, but a very bad commander for the army. Come. Let me begin to make a soldier of you. You see those two big forts at the end of the bridge? The big ones?
Yes. Are they ours or the Goddam's?
Be quiet and listen to me. If I were in either of those forts with only 10 men, I could hold it against an army. The English have more than 10 times 10 Goddam's in those forts to hold them against us.
They cannot hold them against God. God did not give them the land under those forts. They stole it from him. He gave it to us. I will take those forts.
Single-handed?
Our men will take them. I will lead them.
Not a man will follow you.
I will not look back to see whether anyone is following me.
Good. You have the makings of a soldier in you. You are in love with war.
Oh? And the Archbishop said I was in love with religion.
Aye, God forgive me. I'm a little in love with war myself, the ugly devil. I'm like a man with two wives. Do you want to be like a woman with two husbands?
I'll never take a husband. I'm a soldier. I do not want to be thought of as a woman. They dream of lovers and of money. I dream of leading a charge and of placing the big guns. You soldiers do not know how to use the big guns. You think you can win battles with a great noise and smoke.
True. Half the time, the artillery is more trouble than it is worth.
Aye, lad. But you cannot fight stone walls with horses. You must have guns, and much bigger guns, too.
Aye, lass. But a good heart and a stout ladder will get you over the stoniest wall.
I'll be first up the ladder when we reach the fort, bastard. I dare you to follow
me. You must not dare a staff, Officer Joan. I have daredevils enough at my call if they could help me.
I'm not a daredevil. I'm a servant of God. My sword is sacred. I found it behind the altar in the Church of St. Catherine, where God hid it for me. And I may not strike a blow with it. My heart is full of courage, not of anger. I will lead, and your men will follow. That is all I can do, but I must do it. You shall not stop me.
All in good time. Our men cannot take those forts by a sally across the bridge. They must come by water and take the English in the rear on this side.
Well, then make rafts and put big guns on them and let your men cross to us.
The rafts are ready and the men are embarked. But they must wait for God.
Well, what do you mean? God is waiting for them.
Let him send us a wind. My boats are downstream. They cannot come up against both wind and current. We must wait until God changes the wind. Come, let me take you to the church to pray for a west wind. I have prayed. I've given 2 silver candlesticks. But my prayers are not answered. Yours may be. You are young and innocent.
I will pray. I will tell St. Catherine. She will make God give me a west wind. Quick, show me the way to the church. God bless you, boy. Come, bastard.
Signor! Signor! Mademoiselle!
What is it? The kingfisher?
Oh, a kingfisher? Where?
No, the wind! The wind! The wind! That's what made me sneeze. Look at the pennon!
See? The wind has changed. God has spoken. Joan, take my baton. You command the king's army. I am your soldier.
The boats are put off. They're ripping upstream like anything.
Now for the forts. You dared me to follow. Dare you lead?
Dunois, dear comrade in arms, help me. My eyes are blinded with tears. Set my foot on the ladder and say, up, Joan!
Never mind the tears. Make for the flesh of the gun.
Oh!
For God and St. Denis!
The maid! The maid! God and the maid! Hooray!
A tent in the English camp. A bull-necked English chaplain, John de Stogomber, is sitting at a table, hard at work, writing. At the other side of the table, the Earl of Warwick is turning over the leaves of an illuminated Book of Hours.
Ah, now this is what I call workmanship. There is nothing on earth more exquisite than a bonny book with well-placed columns of rich black writing in beautiful borders and illuminated pictures cunningly inset. Nowadays, instead of looking at books, people read them. A book might as well be one of those orders for bacon and bran that you are scribbling.
I must say, my lord, you take our situation very coolly indeed.
What is the matter?
The matter, my lord, is that we English have been defeated.
That happens, you know. It is only in history books and ballads that the enemy is always defeated.
But we are being defeated over and over again. First Orleans...
Orleans.
Oh, I know what you're going to say, my lord. That was a clear case of witchcraft and sorcery. But we are still being defeated. Jorgo, Myong, Beaugency, just like Orleans. And now we've been butchered at Pate and Sir John Talbot taken prisoner. I feel it, my lord. I feel it very deeply. I cannot bear to see my countrymen defeated by a parcel of foreigners.
Oh, you are an Englishman, are you?
Certainly not, my lord. I am a gentleman. Still, like your lordship, I was born in England, and that makes a difference.
You are attached to the soil, hmm?
It pleases your lordship to be satirical at my expense. Your greatness privileges you to be so with impunity. But your lordship knows very well that I am not attached to the soil in a vulgar manner like a serf. Still, I have a feeling about it, and I am not ashamed of it. And by God, if this goes on any longer, I will fling my cassock to the devil and take arm myself and strangle the accursed witch with my own hands.
Easy, man, easy. We shall burn the witch and beat the best of Orleans all in good time. Indeed, I am waiting at present for the Bishop of Beauvais to arrange the burning with him. He has been turned out of his diocese by her faction.
You have first to catch her, my lord.
Or by her, I will offer a king's ransom.
A king's ransom for that slut?
One has to leave a margin. Some of Charles's people will sell her to the Burgundians will sell her to us, and there will probably be three or four middlemen who will expect their little commissions.
Monstrous!
My lord?
Yes, Page.
The Right Reverend the Bishop of Beauvais, Monseigneur Cochon.
Ah, my dear bishop. How good of you to come. Allow me to introduce myself. Richard de Beauchamp, Earl of Warwick, at your service.
Your lordship's fame is well known to me.
This reverend cleric is Master John de Stogenberg.
John Bowyer Spencer Neville de Stogenberg at your service, my lord. Bachelor of Theology and Keeper of the Private Seal to His Eminence the Cardinal of Winchester.
You call him the Cardinal of England, I believe, my dear bishop, our king's uncle.
Monsieur John de Stogenberg, I am always the very good friend of His Eminence.
Do me the honor to be seated. Well, my lord bishop, you find us in one of our unlucky moments. Charles is to be crowned at Reims practically by the young woman from Lorraine. And I must not deceive you, nor flatter your hopes. We cannot prevent it. I suppose it will make a great difference to Charles's position.
Undoubtedly. It is a masterstroke of the maids.
We were not fairly beaten, my lord bishop. No Englishman is ever fairly beaten.
Our friend here takes the view that the young woman is a sorceress. It would, I presume, be the duty of your reverend lordship to denounce her to the Inquisition and have her burnt for that offence.
If she were captured in my diocese, yes.
Just so. Now, I suppose there can be no reasonable doubt that she is a sorceress.
Not the least, an arrant witch.
You're asking for the bishop's opinion, Monsieur John.
We shall have to consider not merely our own opinions here, but the opinions, the prejudices, if you like, of a French court.
A Catholic court, my lord.
Catholic courts are composed of mortal men like other courts, however sacred their function and inspiration may be. And if the men are Frenchmen, as the modern fashion calls them... I am afraid the bare fact that an English army has been defeated by a French one will not convince them that there is any sorcery in the matter.
What? Not when the famous Sir John Talbot himself has been defeated and actually taken prisoner by a drab from the ditches of Lorraine.
Sir John Talbot, we all know, is a fierce and formidable soldier, monsieur. But I have yet to learn that he is an able general. And though it pleases you to say that he has been defeated by this girl... some of us may be disposed to give a little of the credit to Dunois.
The bastard of Orleans.
Let me remind...
I know what you are going to say, my lord. Dunois defeated me at Montargis.
I take that as evidence that the Seigneur Dunois is a very able commander, indeed.
Your lordship is the flower of courtesy. I admit on our side that Talbot is a mere fighting animal, and that it probably served him right to be taken at Patay.
My lord... at Orleans, this woman had her throat pierced by an English arrow and was seen to cry like a child from the pain of it. It was a death wound, yet she fought all day, and when our men had repulsed all her attacks like true Englishmen, she walked alone to the wall of our fort with a white banner in her hand, and our men were paralyzed and could neither shoot nor strike, while the French fell on them and drove them onto the bridge, which immediately burst into flames and crumbled under them, letting them down into the river where they were drowned in heaps. Was this your bastard's generalship? Or were these the flames of hell, conjured up by witchcraft?
You will forgive Monsieur John's vehemence, my lord, but he has put our case. Dunois is a great captain, we admit. But why could he do nothing until the witch came?
I do not say that there were no supernatural powers on her side. But the names on that white banner were not the names of Satan and Beelzebub, but the blessed names of our Lord and his Holy Mother. And your commander who was drowned, Glasdell, I think you call him.
Glasdell, Sir William Glasdell.
Glasdell, thank you. He was no saint. Then many of our people think that he was drowned for his blasphemies against the maid.
I told you she was a witch.
She is not a witch, she is a heretic.
What difference does that make?
You, a priest, ask me that? You English are strangely blunt in the mind. All these things that you call witchcraft are capable of a natural explanation. The woman's miracles would not impose on a rabbit. She does not claim them as miracles herself. What do her victories prove but that she has a better head on her shoulders than your swearing Glassdells and Madbull Talbots? And that the courage of faith, even though it be a false faith, will always outstay the courage of wrath.
Does your lordship compare Sir John Talbot, 3 times governor of Ireland, to a mad bull?
It would not be seemly for you to do so, Monsieur John, as you are still 6 removes from a barony. But as I am an earl, and Talbot is only a knight, I may make bold to accept the comparison.
Ah.
My lord bishop, I wipe the slate as far as the witchcraft goes. Nonetheless, we must burn the woman.
I cannot burn her. The church cannot take life. And my first duty is to seek this girl's salvation.
No doubt. But you do burn people occasionally?
No. When the church cuts off an obstinate heretic as a dead branch from the tree of life, the heretic is handed over to the secular arm. The church has no part in what the secular arm may see fit to do.
Precisely. And I shall be the secular arm in this case. Well, my lord, hand over your dead branch, and I will see that the fire is ready for it. If you will answer for the church's part, I will answer for the secular part.
I can answer for nothing. You great lords are too prone to treat the church as a mere political convenience.
You are a traitor!
You lie, priest! If you dare do what this woman has done, set your country above the Holy Catholic Church. You shall go to the fire with her.
My lord, I went too far.
My lord, I apologize to you for the word used by Monsieur John de Stogenberg. It does not mean in England what it does in France. In your language, traitor means betrayer, one who is perfidious, treacherous, unfaithful, disloyal. In our country, it means simply one who is not wholly devoted to our English interests.
I am sorry, I did not understand.
I must apologize on my own account if I have seemed to take the burning of this poor girl too lightly. May I venture to assume that your lordship also, having to see so many heretics burn from time to time, is compelled to take, shall I say, a professional view of what would otherwise be a very horrible incident?
Yes, it is a painful duty, even as you say, a horrible one. But in comparison with the horror of heresy, it is less than nothing.
Just so, and God grant that her soul may be saved. But the practical problem would seem to be how to save her soul without saving her body. For we must face it, my lord. If this cult of the maid goes on, our cause is lost.
May I speak, my lord?
Really, Monsieur John, I had rather you did not, unless you can keep your temper.
It is only this. I speak under correction. But the maid is full of deceit. She pretends to be devout. Her prayers and confessions are endless. How can she be accused of heresy when she neglects no observance of a faithful daughter of the church?
A faithful daughter of the church? The Pope himself at his proudest dare not presume as this woman presumes. She acts as if she herself were the church. It is not the Mother of God now to whom we must look for intercession, but to Joan the maid. What will the world be like when the church's accumulated wisdom and knowledge and experience, its councils of learned, venerable, pious men, are thrust into the kennel by every ignorant laborer or dairymaid whom the devil can puff up with the monstrous self-conceit of being directly inspired from heaven? For now you have only Mahomet and his dupes and the maid and her dupes. But what will it be when every girl thinks herself a Joan and every man a Mahomet? I shudder to the very marrow of my bones when I think of it. I have fought it all my life, and I will fight it to the end.
You feel strongly about it, naturally.
Do not you?
I am a soldier, not a churchman. As a pilgrim, I saw something of the Mahometans. They were not so ill-bred as I had been led to believe. In some respects, their conduct compared favorably with ours.
I have noticed this before.
Men go to the east to convert the infidels, and the infidels pervert them. The crusader comes back more than half a Saracen. Not to mention that all Englishmen are born heretics.
Englishmen? Heretics? My lord, must we endure this? His lordship is beside himself. How can what an Englishman believes be heresy? It is a contradiction in terms.
I absolve you, Monsieur de Stogomba, on the ground of invincible ignorance. The thick air of your country does not breed theologians.
You would not say so if you heard us quarreling about religion. But, my lord, to my mind, there is a stronger case against the maid than the one you have so forcibly put. Have you noticed that she proposes to all the kings of Europe, as she has already pressed on Charles, a transaction which would wreck the whole social structure of Christendom?
Wreck the church, I tell you so.
My lord, pray get the church out of your head for a moment and remember that there are temporal institutions in the world as well as spiritual ones. Her idea is that the kings should give their realms to God and then reign as God's bailiffs. It is a cunning device to supersede the aristocracy and make the king sole and absolute autocrat.
You need not fear, my lord. Some men are born kings and some are born statesmen. The two are seldom the same. Where would the king find counselors to plan and carry out such a policy for him?
Perhaps in the church, my lord. Strike down the barons and the cardinals will have it all their own way.
My lord, we shall not defeat the maid if we strive against one another. I know well that there is a will to power in the world. I know that while it lasts, there will be a struggle between the emperor and the pope, between the dukes and the political cardinals, between the barons and the kings. The devil divides us and governs. I see you are no friend to the church. You are an earl, first and last, as I am a churchman, first and last. But can we not sink our differences in the face of a common enemy? I see now that what is in your mind is not that this girl has never once mentioned the church and thinks only of God and herself, but that she has never once mentioned the peerage and thinks only of the king and herself.
Quite so. These two ideas of hers are the same idea at bottom. It goes deep, my lord. It is the protest of the individual soul against the interference of priest or peer between the private man and his God. I should call it Protestantism, if I had to find a name for it.
Ah, you understand it wonderfully well, my lord. Scratch an Englishman and find a Protestant.
I think you are not entirely void of sympathy with the maid's secular heresy, my lord. I leave you to find a name for it.
You mistake me, my lord. I have no sympathy with her political presumptions. But as a priest, I have gained a knowledge of the minds of the common people, and there you will find yet another most dangerous idea. When she threatens to drive the English from the soil of France, she is undoubtedly thinking of the whole extent of country in which French is spoken. To her, the French-speaking people are what the Holy Scriptures describe as a nation. Call this side of her heresy nationalism, if you will. I can find you no better name for it. I can only tell you that it is essentially anti-Catholic and anti-Christian. For the Catholic Church knows only one realm, and that is the realm of Christ's kingdom.
Well, if you will burn the Protestant, I will burn the nationalist. Though perhaps I shall not carry Monsieur John de Stogomer with me there. England for the English will appeal to him.
Certainly England for the English goes without saying. It is a simple law of nature. But this woman denies to England her legitimate conquests, given her by God, because of her peculiar fitness to rule over less civilized races for their own good. That is not to be endured. Let her perish, let her burn. Let her not infect the whole flock. It is expedient that one woman die for the people.
My lord, we seem to be agreeing.
I will not imperil my soul. I will uphold the justice of the church. I will strive to the utmost for this woman's salvation.
I am sorry for the poor girl. I hate these severities. I will spare her if I can.
I would burn her with my own hands.
Sancta Simplicitas.
Thank you.
the ambulatory in the Cathedral of Reims, and the organ is playing the people out of the nave after the coronation. Joan is kneeling in prayer before one of the stations of the cross. She is beautifully dressed, but still in male attire.
Come, Joan. You've had enough praying. After that fit of crying, you will catch a chill if you stay here any longer. It is all over. The cathedral is empty and the streets are full. They're calling for the maid. You've told them you're staying here alone to pray, but they want to see you again.
No, dear Dunois. Let the king have all the glory.
He only spoils the show, poor devil. No, Joan, you have crowned him and you must go through with it.
No.
Come, come. It'll be over in a couple of hours. Better than the bridge at Orleans, eh?
Oh, Jack. How I wish it were the bridge at Orleans again. We lived at that bridge.
Yes, Faith, and died too, some of us.
Isn't it strange? I'm such a coward. I'm frightened beyond words before a battle. But it is so dull afterwards when there's no danger. Oh, so dull, dull, dull.
You must learn to be abstemious in war just as you are in your food and drink, my little saint.
Dear Jack, I think you like me as a soldier likes his comrade.
You need it, poor innocent child of God. You have not many friends at court.
Why do all these courtiers and knights and churchmen hate me? What have I done to them? I've asked nothing for myself except that my village shall not be taxed, for we cannot afford war taxes. I brought them luck and victory. I've set them right when they were doing all sorts of stupid things. I've crowned Charles and made him a real king. And all the honours he's handing out have gone to them. Then why do they not love me?
Simpleton. Do you expect stupid people to love you for showing them up? The blundering old military dugouts love the successful young captains who supersede them. Do ambitious politicians love the climbers who take the front seats from them? Do archbishops enjoy being played off their own altars, even by saints? Why, I should be jealous of you myself if I were ambitious enough.
Oh, you are the pick of the basket here, Jack. The only friend I have among all these nobles. I'll wager your mother was from the country. I will go back to the farm when I've taken Paris.
I'm not so sure that they will let you take Paris.
What?
I should have taken it myself before this if they'd all been sound about it. Some of them would rather Paris took you, I think. So take care.
Jack, the world is too wicked for me. If the Goddams and the Burgundians do not make an end of me, the French will. Only for my voices I should lose all heart. That is why I had to steal away to pray here alone after the coronation. I'll tell you something, Jack. It is in the bells I hear my voices. Not today when they all rang. That was nothing but jangling. But here, in this corner, where the bells come down from heaven and the echoes linger, when the great bell goes after God will save France, it is then that St. Margaret and St. Catherine and sometimes even the Blessed Michael will say things that I cannot tell beforehand. Then, oh, then,
Joan, we shall hear whatever we fancy in the booming of the bell. You make me uneasy when you talk about your voices. I should think you were a bit cracked if I hadn't noticed that you gave me very sensible reasons for what you do. Though I hear you telling others you're only obeying Madame St. Catherine.
Well, I have to find reasons for you because you do not believe in my voices. But the voices come first, and I find the reasons after, whatever you may choose to believe.
Are you angry, Joan?
Yes. No, not with you.
Oh.
Oh, well, your majesty is an anointed king at last. How do you like it?
Oh, I would not go through it again to be emperor of the sun and moon. The weight of those robes. I thought I should have dropped when they loaded that crown up to me. And the famous holy oil they talked so much about was rancid. Where is the maid?
Sire.
Ah.
I've made you king. My work is done. I'm going back to my father's farm.
Oh, are you? Well, that'll be very nice.
Oh.
A healthy life, you know.
But a dull one.
You'll find the petticoats tripping you up after leaving them off for so long.
You will miss the fighting. It's a bad habit, but a grand one, and the hardest of all to break yourself of.
Lair, in spite of all your sins and swears, we shall meet in heaven. For I love you as I love Peter, my old sheepdog. Peter could get a wolf. And you will kill the English wolves until they go back to their country and become good dogs of God, will you not?
Oh, you and I together, yes.
No. I shall last only a year from the beginning.
Sure.
No, no.
I know it somehow.
Nonsense.
Jack, do you think you'll be able to drive them out? Jack, before I go home, let us take Paris.
Oh, no, no. We shall lose everything we've gained. Oh, don't let us have any more fighting. We can make a very good treaty with the Duke of Burgundy.
Treaty?
Well, why not, now that I'm crowned and anointed?
Your Majesty.
Oh, Archbishop, the maid wants to start fighting again.
Have we ceased fighting, then? Are we at peace?
No, I suppose not, but let us be content with what we have done. Let us make a treaty. Our luck is too good to last, and now is our chance to stop before it turns.
Luck? God has fought for us, and you call it luck? And you'd stop while there are still Englishmen on this holy earth of dear France.
Maid, the king addressed himself to me, not to you. You forget yourself. You very often forget yourself.
Then speak you and tell him that it is not God's will that he should take his hand from the plough.
If I am not so glib with the name of God as you are, it is because I interpret his will with the authority of the church and of my sacred office. When you first came, you respected it and would not have dared to speak as you are now speaking. You came clothed with the virtue of humility, and because God blessed your enterprises accordingly, you have stained yourself with the sin of pride.
Yes, she thinks she knows better than everyone else.
But I do know better than any of you seem to, and I'm not proud. I never speak unless I know I'm right.
Uh-huh. Just so.
How do you know you are right?
Well, I always know. My voice is...
Oh, your voices, your voices. Why don't your voices come to me? I am king, not you.
They do come to you, but you do not hear them. You've not sat in the field in the evening listening for them. When the Angelus rings, you cross yourself and have done with it. But if you prayed from your heart and listened to the thrilling of the bells in the air after they stopped ringing, you'd hear the voices as well as I do. But what voices do you need to tell you what the blacksmith can tell you? That you must strike while the iron is hot. I tell you that we must make a dash at Compiègne and relieve it as we relieved Orleans. Then Paris will open its gates, or if not, we'll break through them. What is your crown worth without your capital?
Yeah, that is what I say, too. We shall go through them like a red-hot shot through a pound of butter. What do you say, Bassett?
If our cannonballs were all as hot as your head, Lee, and we had enough of them, we should conquer the earth, no doubt. Mm. Pluck and impetuosity are good servants in war, but bad masters. They have delivered us into the hands of the English every time we have trusted to them. We never know when we are beaten. That is our great fault.
You never know when you're victorious. That is a worse fault. I shall have to make you carry looking glasses in battle to convince you that the English have not cut off all your noses. You don't know how to begin a battle, and you don't know how to use your cannons, and I do.
I know what you think of us, General Joe.
Never mind that, Jack. Tell them what you think of me.
I think that God was on your side, for I have not forgotten how the wind changed and how our hearts changed when you came. And by my faith, I shall never deny that it was in your sign that we conquered. But I tell you, as a soldier, that God is no man's daily drudge, and no maid's either. If you are worthy of it, he will sometimes snatch you out of the jaws of death and set you on your feet again. But that is all. Once on your feet, you must fight with all your might and all your craft. For he has to be fair to your enemy, too. Don't forget that.
But, Jack, that's...
I have not finished. King Charles, you've said no word in your proclamation of my part in this campaign.
No,
and I make no complaint of that. For the people will run after the maid and her miracles, and not after the bastard's hard work finding troops for her and feeding them. But I know exactly how much God did for us through the maid, and how much he left to me to do by my own wits. And I tell you, Joan, that your little hour of miracles is over, and that from this time on, he who plays the war game best will win. If the luck is on his side.
If ifs and ands were pots and pans, there'd be no need of tinkers. I tell you, bastard, your art of war is no use, because your knights are no good for real fighting. What use is armor against gunpowder? And if it was, do you think that men that are fighting for France and for God will stop to bargain about ransoms, as half your knights live by doing? No. They will fight to win, and they will give up their lives out of their own hands into the hand of God when they go into battle, as I do. Common folks understand this. They cannot afford armor and cannot pay ransoms. But they follow me half naked into the moat and up the ladder and over the wall. With them it is my life or thine, and God defend the right.
Not content with being Pope, Joan, you must be Caesar and Alexander as well.
Pride will have a fall, Joan.
Oh, never mind whether it's pride or not. Is it true? Is it common sense?
It is true. Oh, let her have her way, Dunois.
She does not know everything, but she has got hold of the right end of the stick. Fighting is not what it was, and those who know least about it often make the best job of it.
I know all that. I do not fight in the old way. I have learnt the lesson of Agincourt, of Poitiers, and Crecy, and I know how many lives any move of mine will cost. And if the move is worth the cost, I make it and pay the cost. But Joan never counts the cost at all. She goes ahead and trusts to God. She thinks she has God in her pocket. Up to now, she's had the numbers on her side and she has won. But I know Joan, and I see that someday she will go ahead when she has only 10 men to do the work of 100. And then she will find that God is on the side of the big battalions. She will be taken by the enemy. And the lucky man that makes the capture will receive £16,000 from the Earl of Warwick.
£16,000? Hey, laddie, have they offered that for me? There cannot be so much money in the world.
There is, in England. And now tell me, all of you, which of you will lift a finger to save Joan once the English have got her? The day when the enemy finds out that she is as vulnerable as I am and not a bit more invincible, she will be not worth the life of a single soldier to us. And I will not risk that life, much as I cherish her as a companion in arms.
I don't blame you, Jack. You're right. I'm not worth one soldier's life if God lets me be beaten. But France may think me worth my ransom after what God has done for her through me.
I tell you, I had no money. And this coronation, which is all your fault, has cost me the last farthing I can borrow.
Well, the church is richer than you. I put my trust in the church.
You stand alone, woman, absolutely alone. When you pass through these doors into the sunlight, the crowd will cheer you. They will bring you their little children and their invalids to heal. They will kiss your hands and feet and do what they can, poor simple souls, to turn your head and madden you with the self-confidence that is leading you to your destruction. But you will be nonetheless alone. They cannot save you. We, and we only, can stand between you and the stake.
I have better friends and better counsel than yours.
In future, then, fend for yourself. And if you fail, God have mercy on your soul.
That is the truth, Joan. Heed it.
Where would you all have been now if I had heeded that sort of truth? There is no help, no counsel in any of you. Yes, I am alone on earth. I've always been alone. My father told my brothers to drown me if I would not stay to mind his sheep while France was bleeding to death. France might perish if only our lambs were safe. I thought France would have friends at the court of the King of France. And I find only wolves fighting for pieces of a poor torn body. I thought God would have friends everywhere because he is a friend of everyone. And in my innocence, I believed that you who now cast me out would be like strong towers to keep harm from me. But I'm wiser now, and nobody is any the worse for being wiser. Do not think you can frighten me by telling me that I am alone. France is alone, and God is alone. And what is my loneliness before the loneliness of my country and my God? I see now that the loneliness of God is his strength. What would he be if he listened to your jealous little counsels? Well, my loneliness will be my strength too. It is better to be alone with God. His friendship will not fail me, nor his counsel, nor his love. In his strength I will dare and dare and dare until I die. I will go out now to the common people, and let the love in their eyes comfort me for the hate in yours. You will all be glad to see me burnt. And if I go through the fire, I shall go through it to their hearts forever and ever. And so, God be with me.
If only she would keep quiet or go home.
Rouen on the 30th of May, 1431. A great stone hall in the castle has been arranged for a trial at law, but not a trial by jury, the court being the bishop's court, with the Inquisition participating. The Earl of Warwick comes in, followed by his page.
I suppose your lordship is aware that we have no business here. This is an ecclesiastical court, and we're only the secular arm.
I am aware of that fact. Will it please your impudence to find the Bishop of Beauvais for me and give him a hint that he can have a word with me here before the trial, if he wishes?
Yes, my lord.
And mind you behave yourself. Do not address him as Pious Peter.
No, my lord, I shall be kind to him, because when the maid is brought in, Pious Peter will have to pick a peck of pickled pepper. Oh. My lord, the Right Reverend, his lordship, the Bishop of Beauvais, and two reverend gentlemen.
Get out and see that we are not interrupted.
Right, my lord.
I wish your lordship good morrow.
Good morrow to your lordship. Have I had the pleasure of meeting your friends before? I think not.
This, my lord, is Brother John Lemaitre of the Order of St. Dominic. He is acting as deputy for the chief inquisitor into the evil of heresy in France. Brother John, the Earl of Warwick.
Your reverence is most welcome.
My lord?
We have no inquisitor in England, unfortunately, though we miss him greatly, especially on occasions like the present.
This gentleman is Canon John Destivere of the Chapter of Bayeux. He is acting as promoter.
Promoter?
A prosecutor, you would call him in civil law.
Ah, prosecutor, quite, quite. I am very glad to make your acquaintance, Canon Destivere.
My lord?
May I ask what stage the proceedings have reached? It is now more than 9 months since the maid was captured at Compiègne by the Burgundians. Is this trial never going to end?
It has not yet begun, my lord.
Not yet begun? Why, you've been at it 11 weeks.
We have not been idle, my lord. We have held 15 examinations of the maid, 6 public and 9 private.
You see, my lord, I have been present at only 2 of these examinations. They were proceedings of the bishop's court solely and not of the holy office of the Inquisition. I have only just decided to associate myself, that is, to associate the Holy Inquisition with the bishop's court. Therefore, everything is now in order, and we proceed to trial this morning.
This moment, if your lordship's convenience allows.
Well, that is good news, gentlemen. I will not attempt to conceal from you that our patience was becoming strained.
So I gathered from the threats of your soldiers to drown those of our people who favor the maid.
Dear me. At all events, their intentions were friendly to you, my lord.
I hope not. I am determined that the woman shall have a fair hearing. The justice of the church is not a mockery, my lord.
Sir, I am the promoter, and it has been my painful duty to present the case against the girl. But believe me, I would throw up my case today and hasten to her defense if I did not know that men far my superior in learning and piety, in eloquence and persuasiveness, have been sent to reason with her, to explain to her the danger she is running and the ease with which she may avoid it. Men have dared to say that we are acting from hate, but God is our witness that they lie. Have we tortured her? No. Have we ceased to exhort her, to implore her to have pity on herself, to come to the bosom of her church as an erring but beloved child?
Take care, Canon. All that you say is true, but if you make my Lord of Warwick believe it, I will not answer for your life, and hardly for my own.
Oh, my lord, you are very hard on us poor English. But we certainly do not share your pious desire to save the maid. In fact, I tell you now plainly that her death is a political necessity, which I regret, but cannot help. If the church lets her go...
If the church lets her go, woe to the man were he the emperor himself who dares lay a finger on her. The church is not subject to political necessity, my lord.
You need have no anxiety about the result, my lord. You have an invincible ally in the matter, one who is far more determined than you that she shall burn.
And who is this very convenient partisan, may I ask?
The maid herself. Unless you put a gag in her mouth, you cannot prevent her from convicting herself 10 times over every time she opens it. That is perfectly true, my lord. My hair bristles on my head when I hear so young a creature utter such blasphemies.
Well, by all means, do your best for her, if you are quite sure it will be of no avail. I should be sorry to have to act without the blessing of the church. Shall I send your people in to you?
Yes, it will be very good of your lordship to withdraw and allow the court to assemble.
What scoundrels these English nobles are.
All secular power makes men scoundrels. They are not trained for the work, and they have not the apostolic succession. Our own nobles are just as bad.
Good morning, Master de Stuckup, chaplain to the Cardinal of England.
Of Winchester, my lord. I have to make a protest, my lord.
You make a great many.
I am not without support, my lord. Here is Master de Courcelles, canon of Paris, who associates himself with me in my protest.
My lord.
Well, what is the matter?
Speak you, Master de Courcelles, since I do not seem to enjoy his lordship's confidence.
My lord, we have been at great pains to draw up an indictment of the maid on 64 counts. We are now told that they have been reduced without consulting us.
Master de Courcelles, I am the culprit. I am overwhelmed with admiration for the zeal displayed in your 64 counts, but in accusing a heretic, as in other things, enough is enough. Therefore, I have thought it well to have your 64 articles cut down to 12.
12?
12 will, believe me, be quite enough for your purpose.
But some of the most important points have been reduced almost to nothing. For instance, the maid has actually declared that the blessed saints Margaret and Catherine and the holy archangel Michael spoke to her in French. This is a vital point.
You think, doubtless, that they should have spoken in Latin?
No, he thinks they should have spoken in English.
Naturally, my lord.
Well, as we are all here agreed, I think that these voices of the maid are the voices of evil spirits tempting her to her damnation. It would not be very courteous to you, Master de Stogenberg, or to the King of England, to assume that English is the devil's native language. So let it pass. The matter is not wholly omitted from the 12 articles. Pray take your places, gentlemen, and let us proceed to business.
Well, I protest. That is all.
I think it hard that all our work should go for nothing. It's only another example of the diabolical influence which this woman exercises over the court.
Do you suggest that I am under diabolical influence?
I suggest nothing, my lord, but it seems to me that there is a conspiracy here to hush up the fact that the maid stole the Bishop of Senlis's horse.
This is not a police court. Are we to waste our time on such rubbish?
My lord, do you call the bishop's horse rubbish?
I suggest to you, with great respect, that if we persist in trying the maid on trumpery issues on which we may have to declare her innocent, she may escape us on the great main issue of heresy, on which she seems so far to insist on her own guilt. Stick to the heresy, gentlemen, and leave the other matters alone.
I agree with my colleague the Inquisitor that it is on the count of heresy that we must proceed.
But is there any great harm in the girl's heresy? Is it not merely her simplicity? Many saints have said as much as Joan.
Brother Martin, if you had seen what I have seen of heresy, you would not think it a light thing, even in its most apparently harmless and even lovable and pious origins. Heresy begins with people who are to all appearance better than their neighbors. A gentle, pious girl, or a young man who has obeyed the command of our Lord by giving all his riches to the poor and putting on the garb of poverty, the life of austerity, and the rule of humility and charity, may be the founder of a heresy that will wreck both church and empire, if not ruthlessly stamped out in time. Mark what I say. When maids will neither marry nor take regular vows, and men reject marriage and exalt their lusts into divine inspirations, then as surely as the summer follows the spring, they begin with polygamy and end by incest. Heresy at first seems innocent and even laudable, but it ends in such a monstrous horror of unnatural wickedness that the most tender-hearted among you, if you saw it at work as I have seen it, would clamor against the mercy of the church in dealing with it. You must not fall into the common error of mistaking these simpletons for liars and hypocrites. They believe honestly and sincerely that their diabolical inspiration is divine. Therefore, you must be on your guard against your natural compassion. You are all, I hope, merciful men. How else could you have devoted your lives to the service of our gentle Savior? You are going to see before you a young girl, pious and chaste. For I must tell you, gentlemen, that the things said of her by our English friends are supported by no evidence. Whilst there is abundant testimony that her excesses have been excesses of religion and charity, and not of worldliness and wantonness. This girl is not one of those whose hard features are the sign of hard hearts, and whose brazen looks and lewd demeanor condemn them before they are accused. The devilish pride that has led her into her present peril has left no mark on her countenance. Strange as it may seem to you, it has even left no mark on her character, outside those special matters in which she is proud. So that you will see a diabolical pride and a natural humility seated side by side in the selfsame soul. Therefore, be on your guard. God forbid that I should tell you to harden your hearts, for her punishment, if we condemn her, will be so cruel that we should forfeit our own hope of divine mercy were there one grain of malice against her in our hearts. But if you hate cruelty, and if any man here does not hate it, I command him on his soul's salvation to quit this holy court. I say, if you hate cruelty, remember that nothing is so cruel in its consequences as the toleration of heresy. Remember also that no court of law can be so cruel as the common people are to those whom they suspect of heresy. The heretic in the hands of a holy office is safe from violence, is assured of a fair trial, and cannot suffer death, even when guilty, if repentance follows sin. Gentlemen, I am compassionate by nature as well as by my profession. And though the work I have to do may seem cruel to those who do not know how much more cruel it would be to leave it undone, I would go to the stake myself sooner than do it if I did not know its righteousness, its necessity, its essential mercy. I ask you to address yourself to this trial in that conviction. Have you anything to say, my Lord Bishop, before we proceed to trial?
You have spoken for me and spoken better than I could. I do not see how any sane man could disagree with a word that has fallen from you. The court sits.
Let the accused be brought in.
The accused, let her be brought in.
Let the accused be brought in. Sit down, gentlemen. You look very pale today. Are you not well?
Thank you kindly. I'm well enough. But the bishop sent me some carp and it made me ill.
I am sorry. I told them to see that it was fresh.
You meant to be good to me. I know. But it is a fish that does not agree with me. The English thought you were trying to poison me.
What? No, my lord.
They are determined that I shall be burnt as a witch. And they sent their doctor to cure me. But he was forbidden to bleed me because the silly people believe that a witch's witchery leaves her if she is bled. So he only called me filthy names. Why do you leave me in the hands of the English? I should be in the hands of the church. And why must I be chained by the feet to a log of wood? Are you afraid I will fly away?
Woman, it is not for you to question the court. It is for us to question you.
When you are left unchained, did you not try to escape by jumping from a tower 60 feet high? Hmm? If you cannot fly high like a witch, how is it that you're still alive?
I suppose because the tower was not so high then. It has grown higher every day since you began asking questions about it.
You tried to escape?
Of course I did. And not for the first time either. If you leave the door of the cage open, the bird will fly out.
That is a confession of heresy. I call the attention of the court.
Heresy, he calls it. Am I a heretic because I try to escape from prison?
Assuredly. If you are in the hands of the church and you willfully take yourself out of its hands, you are deserting the church, and that is heresy.
It is great nonsense. Nobody could be such a fool as to think that.
This is not yet in order. You forget, Master Promoter, that the proceedings have not been formally opened. The time for questions is after she has sworn on the Gospels to tell us the whole truth.
You say this to me every time. I have said again and again that I will tell you all that concerns this trial. But I cannot tell you the whole truth. God does not allow the whole truth to be told. Well, you do not understand it when I tell it. Oh, I'm weary of this argument. We've been over it 9 times already. I've sworn as much as I will swear, and I will swear no more.
My lord, she should be put to the torture.
You hear, Joan? That is what happens to the obdurate. Think before you answer. Has she been shown the instruments?
They are ready, my lord. She has seen them.
If you tear me limb from limb until you separate my soul from my body, you will get nothing out of me beyond what I've told you. What more is there to tell you that you could understand? Besides, I cannot bear to be hurt. And if you hurt me, I will say anything you like to stop the pain, but I'll take it all back afterwards. So what is the use of it?
There is much in that. We should proceed mercifully.
But the torture is customary.
It must not be applied wantonly. If the accused will confess voluntarily, then its use cannot be justified.
But this is unusual and irregular. She refuses to take the oath.
Master de Courcelles, do you want to torture the girl for the mere pleasure of it?
But it is not a pleasure. It is the law. It is customary. It's always done.
It will not be done today if it is not necessary. Let there be an end of this. I will not have it said that we proceeded on forced confession.
But, my lord,
come, we are wasting time on trifles. Joan, I am going to put a most solemn question to you. Take care how you answer, for your life and salvation are at stake on it. Will you, for all you have said and done, be it good or bad, accept the judgment of God's church on earth, more especially as to the acts and words that are imputed to you in this trial by the promoter here? Will you submit your case to the inspired interpretation of the church militant?
I am the faithful child of the church. I will obey the church.
You will?
Provided it does not command anything impossible.
She imputes to the church the error and folly of commanding the impossible.
But if you command me to declare that all that I have done and said, and all the visions and revelations I have had, were not from God, then that is impossible. I will not declare it for anything in the world. What God made me do, I will never go back on. And what he has commanded or shall command, I will not fail to do, in spite of any man alive. Well, that is what I mean by impossible. And in case the church should bid me do anything contrary to the command I have from God, I will not consent to it, no matter what it may be.
The church contrary to God, you say now, heresy.
My lord, do you need anything more than this?
Woman, you have said enough to burn 10 heretics. Will you not be warned? Will you not understand?
If the church militant tells you that your revelations and visions are sent by the devil to tempt you to your damnation, will you not believe that the church is wiser than you?
I believe that God is wiser than I. And it is his commands that I will do. All the things that you call my crimes have come to me by the command of God. I say that I have done them by the order of God. It is impossible for me to say anything else. If any churchman says the contrary, I shall not mind him. I shall mind God alone, whose command I always follow.
You do not know what you are saying, child. Do you want to kill yourself? Listen. Do you not believe that you are subject to the church of God on earth?
Yes! When have I ever denied it?
Good! That means, does it not, that you are subject to our Lord the Pope, to the cardinals, the archbishops, and the bishops, for whom the Bishop of Beauvais stands here today?
God must be served first.
Then your voices command you not to submit yourself to the church militant.
My voices do not tell me to disobey the church, but God must be served first.
worse.
And you and not the church are to be the judge.
What other judgment can I judge by but by my own?
Oh, out of your own mouth you have condemned yourself. We have striven for your salvation to the verge of sinning ourselves. We have opened the door to you again and again, and you have shut it in our faces and in the face of God. But dare you pretend, after what you have said, that you are in a state of grace?
If I am not, may God bring me to it. If I am, may God keep me in it.
That is a very good reply, my lord.
Were you in a state of grace when you stole the bishop's horse?
No, devil, take the bishop's horse, and you too.
My lord.
We are here to try a case of heresy. No sooner do we come to the root of the matter than we are thrown back by idiots who understand nothing but horses.
Gentlemen, in clinging to these small issues, you are the maid's best advocates. I'm not surprised that his lordship has lost patience with you, Canon. What does the promoter say? Does he press these trumpery matters?
I share the impatience of his lordship as to these minor charges, only with great respect. I must emphasize the gravity of two very horrible and blasphemous crimes, which she does not deny. First, she has intercourse with evil spirits, and is therefore a sorceress. Second, she wears men's clothes, which is indecent, unnatural, and abominable. And in spite of our most earnest remonstrances and entreaties, she will not change them even to receive the sacrament.
Is the blessed St. Catherine an evil spirit? Isn't Margaret? Is Michael the archangel?
Now, how do you know that the spirit which appears to you is an archangel? Does he not appear to you as a naked man?
Do you think God cannot afford clothes for him?
Well answered, Joan. Joan, the church instructs you that these apparitions are demons seeking your soul's perdition. Do you accept the instruction of the church?
I accept the messenger of God. How could any faithful believer in the church refuse him?
Wretched woman, again I ask you, do you know what you are saying?
You wrestle in vain with the devil for her soul, my lord. She will not be saved. Now, as to this matter of the man's dress, for the last time, will you put off that impudent attire and dress as becomes your sex?
I will not.
The sin of disobedience, my lord.
But my voices tell me I must dress as a soldier.
Joan, does not that prove to you that the voices are the voices of evil spirits? Can you suggest to us one good reason why an angel of God should give you such shameless advice?
Why, yes, what can be plainer common sense? I was a soldier living among soldiers. I'm a prisoner guarded by soldiers. If I were to dress as a woman, they would think of me as a woman. And then what would become of me? If I dress as a soldier, they think of me as a soldier, and I can live with them as I do at home with my brothers. Well, that is why St. Catherine tells me I must not dress as a woman until she gives me leave.
My lord, what she says is, God knows, very wrong and shocking, but there is a grain of worldly sense in it, such as might impose on a simple village maid.
If we were as simple in the village as you are in your courts and palaces, there would soon be no wheat to make bread for you.
That is the thanks you get for trying to save her, Brother Martin.
Joan, we are all trying to save you. His lordship is trying to save you. The Inquisitor could not be more just to you if you were his own daughter. But you are blinded by a terrible pride and self-sufficiency.
Why do you say that? I've said nothing wrong. I cannot understand.
Do you see that man who stands behind you?
Your torturer? But the bishop said I was not to be tortured.
You are not to be tortured, because you have confessed everything that is necessary to your condemnation. That man is not only the torturer, he is also the executioner. Executioner, let the maid hear your answers to my questions. Are you prepared for the burning of a heretic this day?
Yes, master.
Is the stake ready?
It is, in the marketplace. The English have built it too high for me to get near her and make the death easier. It will be a cruel death.
But you're not going to burn me now.
You realize it at last?
There are 800 English soldiers waiting to take you to the marketplace the moment the sentence of excommunication has passed the lips of your judges.
You are within a few short moments of that doom.
Oh, God!
Do not despair, Joan. The church is merciful. You can save yourself.
Yes, my voices promised me I should not be burnt. St. Catherine bade me be bold.
Woman, are you quite mad? Do you not yet see that your voices have deceived you?
Oh, no! That is impossible!
Have they kept a single promise to you since you were taken at Compiègne? The devil has betrayed you. The church holds out its arms to you.
Oh, it is true. It is true. My voices have deceived me. I have been mocked by devils. My faith is broken. I have dared and dared, but only a fool will walk into a fire. God, who gave me my common sense, cannot will me to do that.
Now God be praised that he has saved you at the 11th hour.
Amen.
What must I do?
You must sign a solemn recantation of your heresy.
Sign? That means to write my name. I cannot write.
You have signed many letters before.
Yes, but someone held my hand and guided the pen. I can make my mark.
My lord! Do you mean that you're going to allow this woman to escape us?
The law must take its course, Master de Stugenberg, and you know the law.
I know that there is no faith in a Frenchman. Oh. I know what my lord the Cardinal of Winchester will say when he hears of this. I know what the Earl of Warwick will do when he learns that you intend to betray him. There are 800 men at the gate who will see that this abominable witch is burnt in spite of your teeth.
What? Silence, friend. Gentlemen, silence. Master Chaplain, bethink you a moment of your holy office, of what you are and where you are. I direct you to sit down.
I will not sit down.
If you will not sit, you must stand, that is all.
I will not stand.
My lord, here is the form of recantation for the maid to sign.
Read it to her.
Do not trouble. I will sign it.
Woman, you must know what you are putting your hand to. Read it to her, Brother Martin. And let all be silent.
I, Joan, commonly called the maid, a miserable sinner, do confess that I have most grievously sinned in the following articles. I have pretended to have revelations from God and the angels and the blessed saints, and perversely rejected the church's warnings that these were temptations by demons. I confess to the sin of sedition, to the sin of idolatry, to the sin of disobedience, to the sin of pride, and to the sin of heresy. All of which sins I now renounce and abjure and depart from, humbly thanking you, doctors and masters, who have brought me back to the truth and into the grace of our Lord. And I will never return to my errors, but will remain in communion with our holy church and in obedience to our holy father, the Pope of Rome. All this I swear by God Almighty and the holy gospels, in witness whereto I sign my name.
You understand this, Joan?
It is plain enough, sir.
And it is true?
It may be true. If it were not true, the fire would not be ready for me in the marketplace.
Come, child. Let me guide your hand. Take the pen. J. E. H. A. N. E. So, now, make your mark by yourself.
There.
Praise be to God, my brothers. The Lamb has returned to the flock. And the shepherd rejoices in her more than in 99 just persons.
We declare thee by this act set free from the danger of excommunication in which thou stoodest.
I thank you.
But because thou hast sinned most presumptuously against God and the Holy Church, and that thou mayst repent thy errors in solitary contemplation, and be shielded from all temptation to return to them, we, for the good of thy soul, and for a penance that may wipe out thy sins and bring thee finally unspotted to the throne of grace, do condemn thee to eat the bread of sorrow and drink the water of affliction to the end of thy earthly days in perpetual imprisonment.
Perpetual imprisonment? Am I not then to be set free?
Set free, child, after such wickedness as yours? What are you dreaming of?
Give me that writing. Light your fire. Do you think I dread it as much as the life of a rat in a hole? My voices were right.
Joan.
Yes. They told me you were fools. And that I was not to listen to your fine words nor trust to your charity. You promised me my life. But you lied. You think that life is nothing but not being stone dead. It is not the bread and water I fear. I can live on bread whenever I ask for more. It is no hardship to drink water if the water be clean. Bread has no sorrow for me, and water no affliction. But to shut me from the light of the sky and the sight of the fields and flowers, to chain my feet so that I can never again ride with the soldiers nor climb the hills, to make me breathe foul, damp darkness, and to keep from me everything that brings me back to the love of God, when your wickedness and foolishness tempt me to hate him. All this is worse than the furnace in the Bible that was heated 7 times. I could do without a war horse. I could drag about in a skirt. I could let the banners and the trumpets and the knights and soldiers pass me and leave me behind as they leave the other women. If only I could still hear the wind in the trees, the larks in the sunshine, the young lambs crying through the healthy frost, and the blessed, blessed church bells that send my angel voices floating to me on the wind. But without these things, I cannot live. And by your wanting to take them from me, or from any human creature, I know that your counsel is of the devil, and that mine is of God.
If our counsel was of the devil,
and hers of God,
she is a relapsed heretic, obstinate, incorrigible, and altogether unworthy of the mercy we have shown her. I call for her excommunication.
Light the fire, man, to the stake with her.
Oh, you wicked girl, if your counsel were of God, would he not deliver you?
His ways are not your ways. He wills that I go through the fire to his bosom. For I am his child, and you are not fit that I should live among you. That is my last word to you.
Caesar, soldiers,
not yet. We decree that thou art a relapsed heretic. Cast out from the unity of the church. Sundered from her body. Infected with the leprosy of heresy. A member of Satan. We declare that thou must be excommunicated. And now we do cast thee out. Segregate thee. And abandon thee to the secular power.
And abandon thee to the secular power.
Admonishing the same secular power that it moderate its judgment of thee in respect of death and division of the limbs.
And if any true sign of penitence appear in thee, to permit our brother Martin to administer to thee the sacrament of penance.
Into the fire with the wind!
No, no, this is irregular.
The representative of the secular arm shall be here to receive her from
us. That man is an incorrigible fool.
Brother Martin, see that everything is done in order.
My place is at her side, my lord. You must exercise your own authority.
These English are impossible. They will thrust her straight into the fire. We must stop that.
Yes, but not too fast, my lord.
But there is not a moment to lose.
We have proceeded in perfect order. If the English choose to put themselves in the wrong, it is not our business to put them in the right. A flaw in the procedure may be useful later on. One never knows. And the sooner it is over, the better for that poor girl.
That is true, but I suppose we must see this dreadful thing through.
One gets used to it. Habit is everything. I am accustomed to the fire. It is soon over. But it is a terrible thing to see a young and innocent creature crushed between these mighty forces, the church and the law.
You call her innocent?
Oh, quite innocent. What does she know of the church and the law? She did not understand a word we were saying. It is the ignorant who suffer. Come, or we shall be late for the end.
I shall not be sorry if we are. I am not so accustomed as you.
Oh, I am intruding. I thought it was all over.
No, do not go, my Lord Warwick. It is all over.
The execution is not in our hands, my lord, but it is desirable that we should witness the end. So, by your leave?
There is some doubt whether your people have observed the forms of law, my lord.
I am told that there is some doubt whether your authority runs in this city, my lord. It is not in your diocese. However, if you will answer for that, I will answer for the rest.
It is to God that we both must answer. Good morning, my lord.
My lord, good morning. Hello? Some attendance here? Brian, you young blackguard, where are you? Guard!
They have all gone to see the burning, even that child. What in the devil's name?
What is it, Astagova? What is the matter?
My lord, for Christ's sake, pray for my wretched, guilty soul.
Yes, yes, of course I will. Calmly, gently.
I am not a bad man, my lord.
No, no, not at all.
I meant no harm. I did not know what it would be like.
Oh, you saw it then.
I did not know what I was doing. I'm a hot-headed fool, and I shall be damned for all eternity for it.
Nonsense. Very distressing, no doubt, but it was not your doing.
I let them do it. If I had known, I would have torn her from their hands. You don't know. You haven't seen. It is so easy to talk when you don't know. And you madden yourself with words. You damn yourself, because it feels grand to throw oil at the flaming hell of your own temper. But when it is brought home to you, when you see things you have done, when it's blinding your eyes, stifling your nostrils, tearing your heart, then, oh God, take away this sight from me. Oh Christ. Deliver me from this fire that is consuming me. She cried to me in the midst of it. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. She is in thy bosom and I am in hell forevermore.
Come, come, man. You must pull yourself together. We shall have the whole town talking of this. If you have not the nerve to see these things, why do you not do as I do and stay away?
She asked for a cross. A soldier gave her two sticks tied together. Thank God he was an Englishman.
Hush, someone is coming. Control yourself. I am informed that it is all over, Brother Martin.
We do not know, my lord. It may have only just begun.
What does that mean, exactly?
I took this cross from the church for her that she might see it to the last. She had only two sticks that she put into her bosom. When the fire crept round us, and she saw that if I held the cross before her, I should be burnt myself. She warned me to get down and save myself. My lord, a girl who could think of another's danger in such a moment was not inspired by the devil. When I had to snatch the cross from her sight, she looked up to heaven. And I do not believe that the heavens were empty. I firmly believe that her Savior appeared to her then in his tenderest glory. She called to him and died. This is not the end for her, but the beginning.
I am afraid it will have a bad effect on the people.
Oh, it had, my lord, and some of them. I heard laughter. Forgive me for saying that I hope and believe it was English laughter.
No, it was not. There was only one Englishman there that disgraced his country, and that was a mad dog, Astagova. Let them torture him, let them burn him. I will go pray among her ashes. I am no better than Judas. I will hang myself.
Quick, Brother Martin, follow him. He will do himself some mischief.
Yes. After him, quick.
My lord.
Well, fellow, who are you?
I am not addressed as fellow, my lord. I am the master executioner of Rouen. It is a highly skilled mystery. I am come to tell your lordship that your orders have been obeyed.
I crave your pardon, Master Executioner. And I will see that you lose nothing by having no relics to sell. I have your word, have I, that nothing remains? Not a bone, not a nail, not a hair?
A heart would not burn, my lord, but everything that was left is at the bottom of the river. You have heard the last of her.
The last of her? I wonder.
Joan of Arc was burnt for heresy, witchcraft, and sorcery in 1431. Rehabilitated, after a fashion, in 1456. Designated venerable in 1904. Declared blessed in 1908. And finally, canonized in 1920.
O God, that madest this beautiful earth, when will it be ready to receive thy saints? How long, O Lord, how long?
That was St. Joan by Bernard Shaw, with Judy Dench as St. Joan, Stephen Murray as the Inquisitor, Maurice Denham as Monseigneur Cochon, Bishop of Beauvais, Noel Johnson as the Earl of Warwick, Michael Williams as Dunois, and Douglas Storm as John de Stogamber. The rest of the cast was as follows. Captain Robert de Baudricourt, Kerry Francis, Steward Peter Tuddenham, Bertrand de Poulanger, Nigel Lambert, Lord Chamberlain, Monseigneur de la Tremouille, Alan Dudley, the Archbishop of Reims, John Richmond, Gilles de Rais, Bluebeard, Michael Spice, Captain Lahire, Sean Arnold, Charles the Dauphin, John Rye, Duchesse de la Tremouille, Cécile Chevreau, Canon John d'Estivet, Alan Rowe, Canon de Corcelles, Stephen Thorne, Brother Martin Ladvenu, Michael Deacon, Executioner Clifford Norgate, Pages Peter Whitman and David Erickson, and the narrator Alan McClelland. Technical presentation, Gordon Bowen. Special effects by Mary Barrett, Carol McShane, and David Greenwood.